Topic today is the Tara process. I just wanted to point out one thing that I think I may have missed last time regarding, it was two times ago, regarding Fiat Veset, is that if somebody is on birth control, so when you're on birth control, you don't just stay on birth control all the time, like there are, you know, days you'll stop and you'll get your period, or there's a certain pill you take, it cleans out your system at a certain point, or you stop. So you could be Koveya Veset to get your period after stopping birth control. In other words, if you notice every month that the way birth control works is like you have to take the pill the same time every day. So let's say you take it at 8 p.m. every day. So when you stop, there's an 8 p.m. that you took it, and then the next 8 p.m. you didn't take it. So then you notice that it's always 48 hours after your last pill or something that you get your period. So now you're, and that happens once, and then the next month, 48 hours after you miss a pill, you get your period. And the third time, 48 hours after you stop taking the pill, you get your period. So now we're Koveya Veset Aguf, and you get your period stopping the pill 48 hours later. Okay, so you have to just be aware that you can end up being Koveya, like a Veset Aguf, based on the pill. That was just to be mashlim from previous time. Our topic today is the Tara process. Mido Raita. There was a concept called Nida and a concept called Zava. And Nida was 7 days and Zava was 11 days. So there's Yimei Nida and Yimei Ziva. So there's a machloket Rambam and Ramban how that happened. According to the Rambam, it was a constant cycle. You're either in your Yimei Nida or Yimei Ziva. 7-11, 7-11, 7-11, forever and ever. And women had to keep track which ones they were up to. And if they saw blood while they were in Yimei Nida, then it was Nida blood. If they saw blood when they were Yimei Ziva, it was Ziva blood. Now, in order to become a Zava, you have to see three times during Yimei Ziva. Three consecutive days. If you see Zava once, so you're Tummy that day, and you have to be Tovom, the next day you're Shomer Yom Kereged Yom, etc. Only once you do it three times, then you're considered a Zava, and you would probably need a Korban and the whole Tshuva process. So that was according to the Rambam. According to the Ramban, there's another view that after the Yimei Ziva, you're Tahor for a while until you get your next blood, and that's when you may need to start. So they don't just begin automatically on day 12. But that was all Daraita. Today, forget the issue that nobody knows whether they're up to Nida or Ziva. Nobody can tell the difference between the blood. Nobody knows the difference. And there's lots of different blood. And today, the Not Yisrael have accepted upon themselves a filu tipat dam kechardal, even a drop of blood the size of a mustard seed. They said shivanakim. You need 7 clean days before you can be together. Okay. So that would only be a drop of blood in 7 clean days. Need this much more than that. So how did that happen? So Chazal were also gozer on what's called poletet shechvat zera, which means she is still excreting your semen. And as long as she is still excreting your semen, she can't count the Shiva Nakim. Okay. So, how long does... the background for this was that as long as she was Poletet Shechvat Zera, she was Tamei when it comes to Truma, and not for her husband. But here we're applying it across the board. So Poletet Shechvat Zera lasts 72 hours. After having relations, a woman can still end up dripping out some semen up to 72 hours later. Okay, so now that's 3 days and then 7 days. The problem is that you tend to not have relations or exactly at Alot or Shkia. So you have to keep the entire period, the entire day for that. So now we're up to 4 days, because let's say it was 10 p.m. So 72 hours after that is 10 p.m., 3 days later. But you're tummy that whole day too. So now we're up to 4 days. So you have 4 days, and then 7 days. Now we're up to 7 clean days, and then 11. So before you can even count your Shiva Nakiyam, we had 4 days that are considered tummy, and That's how you get, and then Shiva Nakiyam, and then you can become Tahor. And that is how some Sephardim Paskin. I saw in Rav Mordechai Eliyahu's Sefer and Hilchot Nida and a few others that they say that they hold like the Ashkenazim on this too, though Rav Eliyahu in a footnote was willing to consider being mitzarifid in like Shas and Chak certain situations. Where we may discuss some of the situations as Shas and Chak situations, but most Sephardim are noheg like the Ashkenazim on this one. Now what is that? That we hold 5 days. How do we get to the fifth day? Because we needed 3 days, and you needed the fourth day because it might be the middle of the day. We're also choshesh to the issue of Bein HaShmashot confusing you. And therefore, we're noheg 5 days. So after seeing the drop of blood, you need to wait 5 days, at which point, if there's no blood, so she can start counting her Shiva Nakiyam. She can do the Bdikon and check herself and Shiva Nakiyam, and then she can go to Mikvah. Chazal made this Gzera of Poleta Chichvat Zera, even if you didn't have relations on that last day. It's a low cloak. So it doesn't matter if you didn't have relations since the first of the month, or you know, since the Mikvah night, or whatever it is. 10 days later, she gets her period. So then you still have to wait 5 days, even though you haven't been with her in the previous 10 days, and she's not Poleta Chichvat Zera. They made the Gzera low pluk. They're for people who are having some infertility. Sometimes there might be, when you consult with the Rav, there might be a het there to skip a month, and there's a taina that the low pluk doesn't apply if there weren't any relations at all that month, and then you might be able to start your Shiva Nakiyam without waiting as long. But again, we've discussed that only helps for people whose period is shorter than 5 days, and that's already rare, so it doesn't help so much. Though with some medicines and all sorts of medical solutions, it may be able to make it less than 5 days, and it could help. But you should know it exists to speak to a Rav if it happens, but Zad Hashem, you should never need that. Lamaisa, most women bleed 5, and some even bleed for 6 or 7 days. So the idea of, they added a fourth day, and they added a fifth day, and they added a sixth day, or, you know, they didn't add a sixth day, but they were goes around 3 days, and they added the fourth day and fifth day, and you say, why'd they add all those days? Well, it doesn't matter for most women, because most women bleed for 5 days anyway. It's very rare that this is really an issue. Though, according to some, vitamin C may help a little bit less bleeding. Like, don't expect nothing, but, like, instead of bleeding 6.5 days, it might be 6 days. Okay. To begin, Shiva Nakiyam. So we're at the end of day 5, and she wants to start counting clean days. She needs to do what's called a Hefsek Tara. The Hefsek Tara happens on the 5th day inclusive, which means, let's say she saw on Sunday at 1 p.m. So Sunday counts, Monday counts, Tuesday counts, Wednesday counts, Thursday counts. Before Shkia Thursday night, before Shkia, she has to do this bedika known as a Hefsek Tara. What is this bedika? It's a bedika with the bedika cloth in the vaginal tract. And in order to have this happen and work, she should be sure to bathe on day 4 or 5. That way, any dry blood that remains is gone. If she's bleeding, it's not going to help. But she's not going to end up sticking this cloth in, and it's going to turn red because of dry blood that may be there. The dry blood should be gone. She shouldn't soak right before the Hefsek Tara. I've asked a few of the poskim in this yeshiva, and they all said that they think about 2 hours is appropriate. In other words, if she bathes more than 2 hours beforehand, it's no problem. She's allowed to shower or clean herself down there, even right beforehand, but she shouldn't soak. Bid the Eved, if it's if she doesn't bleed 5 days, or if it's day six or seven now and she's doing this hepsic because she didn't succeed on the fifth day. So she can do the hepsic with the Evan even in the morning. But it's best to do it as close as possible to Shkia. And for this, we have three levels. We have the most bidyavid is morning, the morning. The best is doing it right before Shkia, in the 20 to 30 minutes before Shkia. And in between that is doing it in the 2 hours before Shkia. So it's not just, meaning do it as close as possible to Shkia, because that's not true. Doing it 3 or 4 hours before Shkia is no different than doing it 5 or 6 hours before Shkia. Is that clear? Okay. As a important midos and shalom bayit issue, if your wife forgets to do the hefsek tara, it's your fault. Okay? Not her fault. She was busy, she forgot, finished. Your fault. Never, ever, ever, ever fault her for that. The hefsek tara is a special kind of bedika because at that point she's still tummy, and therefore she can do as many bedikos as she needs. The point of the hefsek tara is that she's going to stick a bedika cloth in there and it's going to come out clean. And therefore, she could do it 10 times, 1,000 times, 1,000,000,000 times. Now, at a certain point, it becomes a problem because she gets dry down there from sticking it in. And it rubs and it might cause an irritation. So therefore, I don't recommend doing it 1,000,000,000 times. But certainly doing it 5, 6 times in order to get a clean one is recommended. Meaning, if she starts a half an hour before Shkia, and she sticks it in and it's almost clean, so she can wait 5 minutes, try again, and it might be a little more almost clean. And maybe the third or fourth one will come out clean. And that's a clean, good hefsek. Now that's unique to the hefsek tara. The other days, we've established, don't do extra bedikos. There's the bedikos we're going to tell you you're going to have to do. Beyond those, don't do extras. When it comes to the hefsek tara, since she's tummy anyway, so the idea is to get a clean hefsek tara, and she could do as many as she needs in order to get to there. The different days when you do bedikot, and we're going to get to that in a second, and it's close to Shkia, and you're not sure if it's Shkia yet, and all the bedikos have to be done by Shkia, so my advice is, do the bedikot. Don't go looking for a calendar. Don't start Googling it, or myzmanim, you know. Just do the bedikot, then ask for Shaila. Look at the exact time that it was, do the bedika, ask the shayla. There are some more mekel shitot for shas al chak, like if you, according to some, even 7 minutes past Shkia, according to some. So we don't do those lechatilo, so ask the shayla, but don't push off doing the bedika because you think it might be Shkia and you're looking for a calendar. That's absurd. First do the bedika, and then look for the calendar after. Then Google it. Okay. When it comes to bedikos, not all color is considered dam halachic. And it doesn't need to be perfectly white. So, you have a bedika and it looks like this brownish color, and you bring it in to the rabbi and he says it's okay. And this happens again the next day and the next day and the next day, all 7 days, and they're all halachically okay. That's it, she's tahor. There's no, shivanakim is like a misnomer. It's not 7 clean days. It's much like dry cleaning. It isn't really dry. They use some kind of material on there, and then that's wet. There's some kind of liquid, which is not water, so dry in terms of not being water. So this is naki from halachic blood, from what looks like the color of halachic blood that comes from the vaginal canal. And as long as it's not that color, she can count it as one of the shivan akiyam. And if she has 7 such days, she can end up tahor. The bad colors are red and black. If it's red and black, it's tummy. When you're not sure yet, so you ask until you're familiar. Well, like I told you, that she's not menace to say, oh, I know this color the last three times, I gave him this exact shade of it, and it came back good, and then it's considered good. Or this exact shade of it came back bad, so then maybe you can still double-check if you want. That doesn't hurt. But, okay. If she sees it, and it's even slightly questionable, she should not declare it bad. There's no backing out of that. In other words, she does a bedika and looks in and goes, ah, that color's tummy. It's tummy. Finished. And you can't now go to the rabbi and have him look at it and tell you it's stuffwork. So she should look at it and go, oh, that looks questionable. And you'll take it to the rabbi and he'll look at it and he'll tell you yes or no. When it comes to orange, there's a shaila, so be sure to ask. When brown, there's a machloket poskim, what the status of brown is. Is it considered red and black or not? So many are makel, including Rav Schechter and Rav Willig. And therefore, I would tell you to avoid any posek who's machmir on brown. You can ask a person before, what do you hold of brown? And he says, brown is okay. You say, okay, now look at this, what color is it? Now, even though they're going to tell you brown is okay, it could be that it's what's called chum hanotel admumit, meaning it's brown that's shading red, like a hue of red, and he's going to paskin, it's no good. But if it really is brown and not inching towards red, so then he's going to be matir. So this color is no good. In certain lights, the Talmud Gemara's looked actually okay, according to some, according to others, not. Because I've done shemesh with a few of the rabbanim around here, and people always ask, look around the room for different shades of things and ask them. So the ozohadr color is tame, including these different shade ones. Like, maybe I don't have it here, but you've seen it. Yeah. Or the abridged ones. Yeah, those are all tame. When you do a bedika, so bedika again is inside. So we said, even a dot, tiniest dot, even if it's smaller than a grist, it's tummy. Let's say you're bringing multiple cloths. Now, how might that happen? Because she did a hefsek tara, and she did 5-10 times, and now it's shkia, so the last one she did, you're going to hold on to, and it has this questionable color, so you're going to hold on to it. And the next morning, because you're not going to go anywhere that night, and the next morning she's going to do a bedika of Shiva Nikiyam. And that one also has a questionable color. So now you have two bedikas, and the next day, you're gonna go to the Rav, and with two bedikas. So you should mark one of them. Now I'm going to tell you something. Please, don't mark them with a red pen. I wish I didn't have to say that, because I've seen it. I've seen, as part of my Shemush, people come with bedikas that were marked, this is day one, with a red pen. A red marker, like a Sharpie. Don't do that. Use something that's vale okay. You know, yellow, green, blue. And I would stay away from purple. Okay. But it's also important to mention when it's a Hefsek Tara, we're a little more machmir on the colors for Hefsek Tara. Some say that when she does the Hefsek Tara, she needs to have kavana that it's a Hefsek Tara. And that's the ideal. And in fact, some say that she, and many say, that she also needs to have in mind that it's the day of the Shiva Nikiyam. So if you're not sure about the Hefsek Tara, she should have in mind, anyway, that the next day is the Shiva Nikiyam. And it could happen, by the way, that you'll bring the Hefsek Tara and he'll say it's no good. And you'll show him the one from the Shiva Nikiyam, and he'll say, oh, that's good. And that counts as the Hefsek Tara. But she won't have to do it again that night. Even though that one was from the morning, because we said again, b'di'evid, the one from the morning is good, so why make her go through it all again? It's annoying. There's a Tosvot citing like a shlah that she should count out loud. It compares it to Sira Sa'omer. Most aren't cultures to this. She doesn't have to say, today is day one of Shiva Nikiyam. But she should have in mind that it's Shiva Nikiyam, that it's day one of Shiva Nikiyam. She doesn't have to verbalize it, though. Okay. There's a minhag, very strong minhag, something called a moch dachuk. And that is, after she does the hefsek tara on day 5, she should insert a new cloth into the vaginal tract and leave it there for bein hashmasha. Ramosha in Igros Moshe says, for this we hold the Bein HaShmashot of the Gra, which is 18 minutes. Now, if this comes out with blood, it ruins the Hefsek Tara, and she's got to do it again the next day. Now, again, halachic blood, meaning it could be a fine color, and you would have to show that, so you could come with this crumpled up one, because it was in there for a while, say this is the Moftachok, is it good, you can come to the Rav. Don't feel so bad if the Moftachok comes out bloody, because if it does, it's likely the morning Vidika would come out bloody too. But, because the Moftachok, albeit a strong minhag, is a minhag, we don't want it to cause too many problems. And therefore, if the woman always needs to wait 7 or 8 days because of the mochtachuk, we tell you not to do a mochtachuk. The mochtachuk should make you, instead of 5 days, do 6 some of the time. That's normal. That's to be expected. That was the gzera, little extra care. That's what the minhag is about. Shouldn't have called it a zera. That's what the minhag is about. A little extra care, precaution. But if it's constantly causing her to not start her Shemitah Kiyum until 7 or 8 days, then that's not what the minhag is about. And therefore, stop doing the moch tachok. We don't do the moch. If there's dam betulim, we wait for 3 months at least. So if you're first time together, she bleeds, and even the next month if she bleeds from you, so we wait until you're tahor, like after having relations she doesn't bleed and there's no markings, and then we wait 3 months, and after that we start doing a moch tahor. So for the first 3 months of marriage, no moch tahor if she bleeds from dam betulim. Rav Shlomo Levi, and I'm told, though I haven't heard it from him, but I've heard it from others, that Rav Willig says it too, that they think halachically a tampon can be a moch. But many others are cholik because the fibers stay in, etc., so we prefer using another bedika cloth. But again, if she finds the bedika cloth uncomfortable and she prefers using a tampon, since it's a minhag, we're mako. Whatever is best for her on that. In order to go to mikvah, this is what's ma'akiv. She needs a hefsek tahara. She needs a bedika on the first day of Shemitah Kiyum. And she needs a bedika on the seventh day of Shemitah Kiyum. Those are ma'akiv. Without those, we're in trouble. Now, let's say that's all she plans on doing. So she does the hefsek, and she plans on doing day 1 and day 7, and she forgets to do on day 1. So now, she needs to do on day 2 and day 8. So, because it needs to be on the 1st and 7th day of Shemitah Kiyum, which means that you need to have a certain number, no more than a certain number of days apart. So let's say she did the hefsek and she did day 1 and she did not do day 2 and did not do day 3 and did not do day 4 and did not do day 5 and did not do day 6 and day 7 she misses shkia. Missed it. So now you can't do day 8. You missed it. So now she does day 8 and she's got to wait a bunch of days again. And therefore, that's why we do the other days too. In other words, do day 1. So some people say, okay, so let's do day 1, day 2, and day 7. Just in case she misses day 7, you have day 2 anyway, you can do day 8. That is true. But the gzera is to do a bedika each day of Shemitah Kiyum. And we actually hold 2 bedikas of each day of Shemitah Kiyum. Again, one in the morning when you wake up, and one at night before Shkia. Rav Willig, Rav Shriver told me Rav Willig holds that one day of one bedika each day of Shemitah Kiyum. Now, that is not the standard in most of the Sfarim I checked, and most of the Poskim I asked. So, what I'm going to say is this. Well, you know, I'm not one to argue on Rav Willig. People I trust as my poskim are ones to argue on him. And they said it's a legitimate shita in that if there's an issue, we'll poskim like it. So there are women who find it very uncomfortable, who end up, you know, or if there's an irritation 1 month and therefore it hurts her, so then poskim like Rav Willig. But in general, we're going to be choshesh to the original gzera of Chazal, and that is two every day of Shimon HaKim. So know that it exists for tzorach. You don't even have to ask a shayla. If she's having an irritation 1 month and it really hurts her, so that month, one each day of Shimon HaKim. But in general, she should be doing two each day of Shimon HaKim. The one in the morning should be before urinating, if possible. That's the ideal. Sometimes after birth, after giving birth, it's hard to get the Shimon HaKim. If it's more than 5 or 6 weeks since the birth, consult a doctor and a rav. Both. Have the doctor look in, see what's going on. Consult the rav. They may have some halachic solutions, what to do. Because again, that's a long time that you've gone without touching her, being with her. She may not be up to you being with her, but at least she would be glad after having gone through childbirth when you couldn't touch her, and after having raised this kid with no sleep for 6 weeks without you touching her, she can definitely use a hug. So be sure to ask. If she has a wound, any sort of bruise, boo-boo down there, consult the rav. We have an issue because these are letaher from Cheskas Tuma, so it's hard to be mekel on these bedikos when you see them. So be sure to ask the Rav, he'll tell you what to do, how many to do, the bare minimum. Let's say she forgot to do a bediko. So if she did the Hefsek Tara and the Moch, but not day one, so you have to start the seven from day two. The Hefsek Tara is still good. We don't say the Hefsek Tara has to be the night before what you're counting as the Shimon HaKiyam. There has to be Hefsek Tara, and then you have to have day one and day seven of Shimon HaKiyam. Let's say you did the Hefsek Tara and the Moch and day one, but then missed day seven. So in Shas Al Chak, maybe there's some room, so ask a Shayla, but it's probably Usher. So really, you should be doing them every day and not having these issues. So that way, if she did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and missed 7, so then she'll do number 8, and everything's fine. The bedikos on the middle days are a takana derabanan, but they don't affect the tahara process. If she did 1, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 8, so she missed 2 and 7, so some say it works, but you should ask a shayla. Rav Shlomo Levi told us in Shir that since there's no period of 6 days without a bedika, it can count. That's how he interprets these halachos, as we need no 6 days without a bedika. So based on that, 1, 3, 5, and 7 would work, but 1 and 9 wouldn't. Okay. The woman can do the bedikos on Shabbos, even on quote-unquote early Shabbos. In other words, Shkia's at, let's say, 5, and you're making early Shabbos at 4. It's unlikely because people do early Shabbos during the summer. So let's say Shkia's at 9, and you're doing early Shabbos at 6. So even though it's Friday night for you, because you made Shabbos already, but it's still not Shkia yet, so she's allowed to do the bedikah between 6 and 9, anyway, for Friday's bedikah. Ideally, she should do it before Hadlaka, but we count it. So then Shabbos day, before it gets nightfall on Motzi Shabbos, she does the bedikah then, even though it's Shabbos, of course. We mentioned the hiddur of counting it out loud, the tosfot and ketuvot, but that's not Meikar Adin. When you ask the rabbi, so unless he's a very, very, very experienced rav, he's only going to look at the Badikos during the daytime, and he's going to do it. He needs sunlight, indirect sunlight, like in the shade of a tree or the shade of a building. He's going to be outside. He may look out the, may go to a window of a building. He's going to do it with the sunlight, indirect sunlight. So not in the sun part, in the shade just adjacent to the sun. He's going to put it right where the shade begins. Some experts check at night, but even they probably recheck during the day. If you bring multiple bedikos, they should check the latest one first. The Shimon Akiyam, after she does the hefsik, she changes to white underwear. Now the issue is that she may get some kind of ketem. Remember, we discussed that a ketem on your underwear, so ketems have to be a certain size. So can she change her underwear in order to avoid the accumulation that would make it that size? And the answer is yes. But if it's more than, if she needs to do it more than every 30 minutes, then we're fooling ourselves. Okay? So if she needs to change her underwear twice a day in order to avoid having a ketem, so that's fine. Know that there's a heter to wear colored underwear during the Shimon Akiyam after birth if we know there's a wound there. So again, Shimon Akiyam are very hard after birth. So if we know there's a wound there and she's having trouble doing the Shimon Akiyam, we may be matir. If the issue isn't the bedikos, meaning this only solves the ketem problem. The issue isn't the bedikos, it's only the ketem problem. So then we're going to be matir colored underwear. Let's say Shimon Akiyam gets ruined and she does a new hefsek tara. She should do a moch too. So day three, she does the bedika, it's no good. So she has to do another bedika that day as the hefsek tara. She can do as many as she wants again, just like a regular hefsek tara. And she should do a moch too. But let me say, if she's adamant not to, that she doesn't want to do the moch this time, shalom bayis, very important, let it go. And of course, the reminder that I must always remind you, don't look at the toilet paper. But we do look at the underwear, that's the point of the Shimon Akiyam. Also your fault. That's also a good reminder. Yes. I don't know how that one's your fault, but yeah. How much longer do you have? Fine? Okay, so let's do the next part. 6 o'clock. Okay. Talk a little bit about a relationship. Two of you are going to grow here to become lovers and best friends, maybe even parent each other, help each other grow, watch each other. I hope I don't have to say this, but I'm going to tell the story that I hope is apocryphal, though I'm sure we've all heard of people like this. But there's a story that this couple comes to a marriage counselor after, I don't know, 10 years of marriage, and the wife says to the marriage counselor, he never says, I love you. And the marriage counselor says, is that true? He says, yeah. I said it to her on the first day when we got married, and it hasn't changed since. So I hope that story's not true. Constantly tell her, love her, and how much you love her, and you'll have a very happy marriage if you come up with creative and colorful ways to tell her that. We believe in falling in love, quote unquote, but that happens more after marriage. And if I've been married a little over 4 years, and I already see this to be true, but I was told this when I got married, and I hope it stays true, that if you ask a person who's married, do you love your spouse? Yes, I love my spouse. And if you ask them after 5 years, you love their spouse, hopefully they say yes. But if you ask them, did you love your spouse when you got married, like you do now? And the answer is no. You love your spouse more after time goes on. In fact, they can often look back at it and be like, I mean, I thought that was love, but what I have now, that's love. So clearly then, I didn't love them yet. I may have liked them and appreciated them and very happy to live with them, but knowing what I have now and knowing that that's what love is, so I didn't love them then. And that, you know, Bezrat Hashem should continue and grow. I'm told that people married, happily married for many years, so that feeling, they look back and like, what, at 20 years, I didn't love you then, now I love you. And, you know, so Bezrat Hashem. Marriage requires effort. Now, there aren't many things in life that we're going to convince people to do and support them doing and warn them how much effort and, like, oh, it ain't easy. No. You have to do it, put in effort. It's important. When I worked in computers, so I saw, there was this myth that I had that bosses, this misconception in my mind, that bosses don't work. They boss people around to do work. The hardest people, the hardest working people were the bosses. The CEOs and the CTOs and the CFOs, they were the hardest working. They set the tone for the whole company. They were the ones staying late and coming early. And if the CEO works hard too, you have to work hard in your marriage. You're the CEO of your marriage. You have to work very hard. A happy family life makes a happy life. Just be very clear. Happy wife, happy life. The Rambam says you have to mechabit her more than yourself. That means that her concerns precede yours. This is not an obligation for the wife. Okay? It's for you. That means if there's a dispute, which will happen, don't freak out, the man must be mature and step back. You don't want to be a doormat, so you have to push to get your way. But I'm going to tell you to make your way. Her happiness should be your primary need. You have to push and insist on her happiness. And then you won't be a doormat. Because then you're getting your way. Your way is to make her happy. Okay? That's how to view it. You're getting a partner, and she'll probably reciprocate if you're constantly working to make her happy. You can establish a cycle of chesed, a contest. Who can keep doing more things for the other one to make them happy? Not a shame, that'll be a very happy marriage. You should never make her feel insecure or feel like there's a need for her to have the upper hand, quote unquote. You have to understand that most decisions don't affect your identity. The color of your room, the color of the flowers at the wedding, what kind of flowers at the wedding. Make it clear that you want to make her happy with these decisions. For Shalom Bayis, Hashem bent the truth of it. You know that story? Okay. Maybe this week's Parsha or last week's Parsha? 2 weeks ago. Okay. So, don't say you don't like a certain food until it's finished, let's say. You can ask her not to make it again in a nice way. The little things can be meaningful. If you ask women, they would much prefer constant comments and positive feedback and cute little notes of love and cards and messages than one really big nice gift that you get. You much prefer the little ones. Communication is very important. We're going to discuss a few things in communication, but one of them is when they say, how was something or how was your day? Good or great or an adjective is not enough. Okay? Let's be very clear. They want you to share, they want you to talk about their, and then they want you to ask them about their day. When you ask them about their day, they want you to listen. And you know, according to many of the books, they don't want you to solve anything, they just want you to listen. To make sure you listen, you know, ask a follow-up question or two, or ask how that made them feel. That's important too. Criticism. So, as little as possible. But when done, it should be in a nice way. And I would recommend only doing it for something that can change. I would also say never to criticize bishato. Sometimes because you can't control your emotions and your voice and the way you say it. Also, it'll be more measured later, and also it's more appreciated later. Like, it just, you know, that thing, let's do it this way instead. And that way, it's not, why are you doing that thing you're doing? Don't do that ever again. That's something to avoid. You have to remember, you're not marrying perfection, though she may be the perfect one for you. There's a saying that men want women never to change, and women want men to change. Could be something to that, I don't know. But you're marrying her and you're hoping to grow together, so in that way you're hoping to change. But don't expect perfection in terms of what you're getting or in terms of what you'll make her become. Don't go in thinking you're going to change her chisrono. Even when you critique, try to do it with positive reinforcement. The first disagreement can be scary, but it's an opportunity for better understanding. And that's about talking to her and dealing with her. When you're with other people, don't slight her or make a joke at her expense. I can't tell you how many times I've cringed at, I can't believe he just said that about her or her about him. I've seen both ways. One time after a couple walked away, you know, we had them over for a meal or Shabbos, my wife said to me, what do you think of what she said about him, making fun of him? And I was like, yeah, that bothered me too. So other people don't like it either. Your spouse is definitely not going to like it. You should take every opportunity to praise her in public. So if you had a Shabbos meal and she made something delicious, you should point it out, or she worked really hard, or made something nice, or said something nice, or did something nice, or gave a good Dvar Torah, you should praise her for it. If they'll always be looking for the good, don't be like the Meraglim. And as the biggest added bonus, there's no greater gift you can give to your child than a happy marriage. Children truly develop when they see their parents truly love one another. And with that, we will end for today.